Well, this past weekend in South Korea, 35,000 mourners dressed in black and white sobbed, prayed, and bid goodbye to the man they called the Messiah. Sun Young Moon, the founder of the Unification Church, did say he was the reincarnation of Jesus Christ. He oversaw a business empire with interest in everything from construction to media. He owned the conservative newspaper, The Washington Times, and had access to the halls of Washington. He officiated at mass weddings, thousands of brides and grooms from different countries, matched up by Moon himself. Peter Poppin writes in the Daily Beast that with Moon's death, parents of teenagers around the world hope the era of the bizarre our religious sect passes with him, that between Moon's death and the new movie The Master, which is based on Scientology founder L. Ron Hubbard, what Popham calls the baby boom sects just might be on their last legs. Well, let's ask our next guest. You may have heard of Stephen Hassan. When he was 19, he became a Moonie, but extricated himself and is now considered a cult expert. His new book is Freedom of Mind, Helping Loved Ones Leave Controlling People, Cults, and Beliefs. And he joins us in the studio. Welcome back, Stephen.
Oh, thanks, Robin. I just want to make a quick correction.
Oh, sure.
That the Moonies don't believe he was reincarnated Jesus. They believe Jesus came to him and asked him to finish his unfinished mission. And Jesus has been working in the spirit world along with Marx and Lenin and Hitler to save the spirit world and save the planet. Of course,
okay.
We should all speak Korean and be married by members.
Well, I'm sorry. I do want to get that right. But listen to that. Listen to what you just said.
Oh, no, it's absurd. And frankly, I just want to make the point right off the top that people have the misconception that really stupid people or weak people get recruited into cults. And I just want to say very smart people educated from good families get deceived and manipulated and hypnotized and brainwashed into these totalistic organizations.
Well, you were one. Can you just very briefly tell us, just briefly, we've spoken of this before.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are on a college campus, three adorable young women come sit down with you. Before you know it, you are a member of the Unification Church.
The context was my girlfriend dumped me and I was depressed. So the flattery and the attention is what the attraction was. I even asked, I remember, after talking with them, are you part of some religious group or something? And they looked me straight in the eye and said, no, not at all.
Yeah, and they were. And you give up everything.
They pretended to be students.
You fight with your family. You have, you know, violent interactions with your father. Just again, briefly, do you remember why? Like, why did you give up everything for this?
Well, I didn't have violent interactions with my father. I threatened to be violent at the point 2.5 years later when he was trying to do an intervention with me and deprogram me. But, you know, destructive cults operate in so many different front groups with so many different lures. And for me, the attraction really was improving myself and making the world a better place. And it was only the notion of a church was introduced when I was in an isolated retreat, at which point I said, I want to leave because I'm Jewish. And they did the classic mind control technique. They turned it around on me and said, what's the matter, Steve? Are you close-minded?
Yeah.
Are you not tolerant to consider other points of view? Are you afraid? And of course, a 19-year-old ego is like, no, I'm not afraid. I bicycled cross-country when I was 16. And it was a slow, incremental manipulation where they installed ideas in my head of, wow, these are the last days. And yes, the Moshiach or the Messiah is supposed to come. So what's this all about? And
Well, hold up a second. What is the difference between – I mean, you list some of the cults that we're familiar with in which people have given their lives. Waco, Charles Manson, Jim Jones, the Branch Davidians, David Koresh, Heaven's Gate. What's the difference? I mean, we can see, okay, that's a cult. What's the difference between a cult and just a very intense organization which requires its believers, as many churches do, to abide by many, you know, certain rules?
Right. So I think the easiest way to explain it is that there's a continuum of influence from one side of constructive ethical influence to the other extreme of destructive, manipulative, undue influence. On the constructive influence side, it gives honest, transparent, responsible information. It respects the individual's free will. It allows them to read whatever they want to read, talk to whoever they want to talk to, and the freedom to leave as well as to ask questions. Whereas on the destructive end of the spectrum, I have literally something called the BITE model, which stands for the behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotional control. And I believe we're going to be putting up that model on your website after the show. That spells out things like phobias are installed in people's minds that gives them irrational fears that if they leave the group, terrible things are going to happen to them. So, for example, I was taken to see The Exorcist and the Moonies, and I was told God made this movie and what would happen to me if I left.
Well, there you go. Okay, look, we are going to talk about some of the new things on the spectrum for you. I was fascinated to read that cults are now passing themselves off as consultants and infiltrating businesses. You say there are benign cults, that some followers of some computer companies might be in sort of a cultish environment. But just before we leave the topic of Reverend Moon, you say your sources say there's a lot of infighting in the family over the estate and leadership of the church. In the minute we have before the break, is the Mooney organization on tender ground? Is it collapsing?
Very much so. The woman, the daughter of Moon, Injun Moon, has recently resigned. She was the head pastor of the Unification Church because she had a baby with not her husband. And the one brother is sued the mother and the other brother, and he owns approximately 60% of the empire. He was not allowed to go see his father's body and pay his respects. So there's a lot of turmoil going on in the unified family.
Well, question after the break, what happens with all those people who followed the church? But also, what are you seeing now, the role of the internet in both recruiting people now into cults, but also former cult members using the internet to have people stay away? Steve Hassan, author of Freedom of Mind, Helping Loved Ones Leave Controlling People, Cults, and Beliefs. We'll also get a little of his advice on that. No longer does he say deprogramming works. I mean, at least the kind where people were kidnapped and thrown in vans and taken away. The change of heart on that as well. More with Steve in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our kind of catch-up conversation with Steve Hassan. He's a frequent guest on the program. He was a member of a cult, and now he's become a world-renowned cult expert. His new book is Freedom of Mind, Helping Loved Ones Leave Controlling People, Cults, and Belief. We're speaking to him in the wake of the death of the leader of the Unification Church, the Moonies. But also, you know, to kind of test the waters, what's going on now. Steve, you say that when people think cults spiked in the 70s, they may be wrong. Because of the internet, they're really spiking now?
Well, I think they've never gone away. I just think the media is not covering them as cults. If they are in the media, they're a sect or they're an unorthodox group because of fear of being sued. Certainly the big cults from the 70s have mainstreamed or at least tried to mainstream, but there are many splinter groups of people who are in these cults who've left and started their own variation of the cult. And when we talk about destructive cults, I want to emphasize we're not just talking about religious groups, but they could be a political cult, therapy cult, large group awareness training cult, business cult, personality.
Let's stop on business cult for just a second, because you write that cults are infiltrating businesses, often passing themselves off as consultants.
Right, human resource consultants that come in and do trainings. So they may be associated with Scientology. They might be associated with Hoffman Quadrinity. Institute. Yeah, that's another organization that has been reported and people I've counseled as a destructive group. So I want to point out, Robin, that I've put up on my website a list that's 67 pages single-spaced of entities associated with my former cult, the Moonies, and most of them are businesses.
Well, you say that what happens is that these pseudo-consultants come in to train employees or, you know, maybe to have weekends, retreat weekends.
Right.
And unlike on The Office where they dress up in fat suits and, you know, push each other around, it's one of my favorite episodes, this can be cult infiltration. You know, believers within the company can pressure other employees to attend the programs, and if people refuse, they're fired or demoted?
Yep. That's, and there have been lawsuits by people who are fired, in fact. And so the key point is to always ask questions and to realize that anyone – the thing about these destructive groups is they don't tell you up front who they are, what they believe, and what they want from you. And they start engaging you in changing of behaviors that if it feels wrong inherently or their conscience is bothering, say no.
And, well, and by the way, we mentioned – one of the things that's happening now is that the internet has come into play. There's a lot of recruiting going on the internet, but the good news is that former cult members are also going online to tell their experiences. But you have to be careful when you go on the internet.
Exactly.
For instance, you might go on the internet and look for some information to find out if something's a cult, and you might come across the Cult Awareness Network. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Well, it used to be a bona fide organization. In fact, my first book, Combating Cult Mind Control, referenced them as the leading counter-cult group. But basically, they were sued into bankruptcy by Scientology, and then they bought the name, logo, and phone number. Scientology did. And now if you contact them with a cult problem, you'll be telling a cult about your problem, and it's not a healthy thing.
Well, okay. So Cult Awareness Network, owned by Scientology, which might say we have every right to defend our organization. So speaking of Scientology, let's just get your thoughts on the new movie, The Master.
Mm.
Philip Seymour Hoffman plays the character that the film's director, Paul Thomas Anderson, says was inspired by L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of the Church of Scientology. In this scene, an acolyte asks a question and Hoffman answers.
What do you do?
I am a writer, a doctor, a nuclear physicist, a theoretical philosopher. But above all, I am a man. Hopelessly inquisitive man, just like you.
Now, Time magazine says anyone looking for an expose of Scientology won't find it in this film. Do you agree?
Absolutely. It was way too soft on L. Ron Hubbard. I've actually been helping people get out of Scientology for 36 years. But people need to know is if they see this film, by the way, I think it was a brilliant film. The acting was amazing. But you kind of need to do your homework on L. Ron Hubbard because you need to kind of have the backstory and understand that this movie is set in the 50s, around the time Hubbard wrote Dianetics. And so it's really a fictionalized version of that, but they were way too soft on the character of
Hubbard. Well, as I said, you know, other reviewers agree with you. Of course, the Scientology followers might disagree, but you point out something interesting. Joaquin Phoenix. I can never get that name right.
Joaquin Phoenix, yes.
He plays the acolyte.
Mm-hmm.
You say what?
Well, first of all,
he was one.
It was interesting because he was so messed up. And the character of Hubbard was going to cure him using the techniques. And, of course, the whole movie was his devotion to the master, but also the master's inability to cure him. But basically, in real life, he was a member of the Children of God. His parents were members of Children of God, which is another destructive
cult.
Moses David Berg, they were famous for happy hookers for Jesus and molesting children because
so
the leader.
Interesting he should choose this role.
Exactly. It hasn't been covered in the media. But I guess I also want to emphasize that this particular movie, it's easy to look at it and say, oh, only stupid or really messed up people would ever fall for this guy's rap, but Hubbard was a stage hypnotist, and there's a lot of manipulative techniques that are used in it, like training routines that train hypnosis, where you have to stare no matter what the person is saying to you. It's a hypnotic technique, and by using hypnosis in an unethical way, it's easy to install crazy science fiction type beliefs.
Oh, Steve Hassan, there's always, you know, so much more we're going to ask you. Again, we'll have a list of all of his books, and a lot of his information at hereandnow.org. We just have a couple seconds, but again, to verify.
Well, to know that people can help loved ones get out without resorting to anything illegal or unethical. And
in some cases, by getting close to them, saying, let me bring some brownies to your group. And, you know,
and trust building is a fundamental, but there's a lot more to it to understand the psychology of cult mind control.
Okay, well, we'll hook everybody up at hereandnow.org. Steve, always a pleasure to speak with you.
Okay, thank you, Robin.
And we will be back with the latest news in just 1 minute, here and now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu. And by the Institute of Contemporary Art, featuring the glass sculptures of Josiah McElhaney, on view now through October 14th, icaboston.org.